In an overly enthusiastic gesture, Sylvia thrust out her hand, which Suzanne appeared amused to shake.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Mademoiselle Beach.
Sylvia, please, she said. What an amazing story you have here. It's so cozy and inviting, and you stalk only the best. Though she did wonder why Suzanne's was not part of the name of the store. Well, Sylvia supposed, Meunier and Bonnière, however charming they looked and sounded together, might have been a bit too obvious, liberal as Paris was about such things. Just the other night, Cyprian had stuffed Sylvia into a pantsuit and donned a sequin dress herself, then enveloped them both in full-length cloaks for the metro ride to a new bar on the Rue Edgar Quinet, where the clientele was entirely women, half of whom wore monocles and spats. The establishment looked like any other local watering hole from the outside, with a small awning simply labeled bar. But once they were inside, the loud, jazzy openness of the place had made Sylvia uncomfortable. She told herself to relax and enjoy the fact that she was living somewhere such an establishment could prosper, somewhere she could be entirely honest about her attractions, and a woman in a tweed suit and cap could sing Billy Murray tunes. It was even protected by the law because same-sex relations had been decriminalized in the French Revolution. But she didn't enjoy feeling like another piece of fruit in a market. The reader in her preferred the quiet and subtlety of A. Meunier.
Why, thank you, Suzanne replied. I have never been to your country, but I have heard and read many wonderful things about it. It has been quite an inspiration to France, of course.
There might be many excellent things about my country, but I'm glad to be here instead, Sylvia replied, her mind going straight to the rise in censorship under the Comstock and Espionage Acts, the long and precarious slog to women's suffrage, and the outrageous idea of an alcohol prohibition that was spreading like wildfire. It seemed like ideas that had once seemed fringe, too strange to contemplate as serious, had taken root in America, while good, strong ideas that would help the country progress into the new century were languishing away.
We are also glad you're here, Adrienne said, beaming.
You must come to the reading tonight, Suzanne exclaimed. Our dear friends Valérie Larbeau and Léon-Paul Fargue will be there. And Jules Romain. You know these writers?
Of course I do. It would be an honor to meet them. The prospect also set Sylvia's stomach churning.
Jules Romain? Vraiment?
What could she possibly have to say to him?
Come back at 8. We pay no attention to the air raids anymore.
Well, there was simply no concentrating on her Spain essay after that. Sitting at her little desk in the Palais, Sylvia kept catching the scent of dust and lavender that reminded her of A. Meunier, the shop, and the woman, both. And every time she buried her nose in her sleeves to find the source of it, she found it was always elusive. She couldn't help thinking that this distraction was just one more sign she was not destined to be a writer, despite the fact that after all the reading she'd done in her life, everyone around her, from her parents and sisters to her oldest friend, Carlotta Wells, just assumed she would be one.
"There's a Walt Whitman in you,"
her father told her every time she brought home another high mark on a school essay.
"I just know it."